Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, every single person out there, Facebook, YouTube, watching this stream. We are Take the Black, the only show on the internet that dares to talk about the things that the lamestream media, TM, I coined that term, won't talk about, like sci-fi, fantasy, dragons, space lasers, swords, horses, and such things as this. I am Dan Selke, the editor of WintersComing.net, yes. Here with Daniel Roman, the other editor of WintersComing.net. Daniel Roman, how are you?
Hello, hello. I'm doing spectacularly. It's a Wednesday. It's spring. I have no complaints. How are you, Dan?
I'm well. It's also nice. I'm about to go on a vacation. That's why I have suitcases behind me. Ooh. The dog's behind those. But as usual, come, dog, show yourself. Be in the camera. It'll be fun.
He's not a show business dog.
There he goes. He's moving a little bit. Maybe come up later. Anyway, we have a bevy to talk about. Hello, everybody. Hello, Margaret. Hello, Martha. Hello, Natalie. Welcome to the stream. And Daniel, I'd like to get right into it because we have some hot topics today. The first of which revolves around the HBO Game of Thrones prequel television series House of the Dragon, set some hundred some years before the original, telling the story of rival factions of the Targaryen dynasty battling for supremacy. And season one came out last year.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was great. People loved it. The ratings were solid. We thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. I had a couple complaints, but overall, definitely probably better than I was fearing. Definitely better than I was hoping. Even we really, really liked
it.
They're working on season two, which is going to probably be due out next year. Most likely. Filming begins either April or May, depending on which leaker you ask, but soon, shortly. Scripts are out, sets are built, actors are talking about getting scripts. And we had last night a report from Deadline, which, just for those of you who don't know, is like a very reliable industry source that gets scoops, talking about
Indeed.
The second season, some changes, the series as a whole, and some shakeups behind the scenes, essentially. And Daniel, I'm sorry if I'm talking a lot, but I figure I'll just narrate.
Tell me, I want
to
know.
We'll open up to discussion. Cool, great.
Sounds good.
Basically,
I'll drink coffee.
Deadline reports, the big headline is that the first season of House of Dragon was 10 episodes long. The second was originally going to be 10 and has now been pushed back to 8. Daniel, your first reaction, you want to give us a spit take, or are you horrified,
sure,
pleased, what?
Well, I already swallowed the coffee, so I can't do a spit take, thankfully, for all of the electronic equipment around me. But I have been a big proponent of thinking it's not a good idea to do shorter seasons. Like, I wrote an editorial about this a while back that I generally don't like that as a thing. But in this instance, I feel like it's probably for the right reasons, because my first reaction when I saw this was, you know what? I could see it. That season two, what I envision for season two, I can't imagine them going past what I'm thinking of, is really like a chapter and a half of the book. So, and it's a lot of big battles.
Mm-hmm.
So this did not worry me the way that it would for another show, honestly. What was your reaction to this?
I mean, it's dependent on why they're doing it and what's actually happening. By the way, hello, Skill over on YouTube. Hey, YouTube peeps, how you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not someone who just like almost, what's the word? Fetishizes episode count for its own sake. Like, honestly, if a series needs to be 7, 6, 4, 10 episodes, I think whatever's best is best. Like, I think do that. I'm not a size queen when it comes to episode counts. Okay, but at the same time, like, remember Game of Thrones? Remember when the episodes everyone loved for the first 6 seasons, the episodes apiece, and then it went to 7 and 6, and everyone said it was rushed, which I kind of agreed with. I thought they should have had more episodes. Some flashbacks, some Vietnam War flashbacks here. We don't want the story to be shortchanged. The longer story about why it was happening was good, reassuring a bit. So basically, Deadline talked to a source.
Okay.
And it wasn't really clear whether it was like an official source or someone telling this to them. They called him like an HBO spokesperson. I wasn't sure if they were talking at a school or if they were like saying this officially. I think out of school. So what they said was that originally the season two was going to be 10 episodes long. And then because the first season was such a big success, what HBO wanted to do was kind of make a plan for the whole thing. Like, they want to do the entire series, because for season one, they only renewed it after season one began to air and it did great. And then they were like, okay, season two is a go. But that meant that, you know, they didn't have things ready. Like, they had to write new scripts and get a new writer's room together and get a new casting department going and doing all that. So HBO wants to do this a little faster. They're already looking at renewing season three early, which would hopefully mean it's a little more like Game of Thrones times when we didn't have to wait 2 years between seasons. And showrunner Ryan Condal got together with A Song of Ice and Fire and Fire and Blood author George R.R. Martin. And what Deadline said is they kind of mapped out the rest of the show. Like, they're kind of looking at it lasting 4 seasons, which sounds about right for this story, if it's based on this book, Fire and Blood, which is, as you mentioned, just very different from Long Western Fire. It's like we're tapping like sentences to whole episodes, and it worked pretty good in season one. So whatever, because it's much shorter.
Yes.
And in that restructuring process, when they were looking at, you know, how long should it be, what should go where, what event should happen where, they moved something from the end of the original season two to the start of season three, some kind of big battle, not sure which one, and came up with, we should do 8 episodes for season two. So, and the spokesperson was careful that this isn't like a budget thing. This isn't like a David Zaslav is mandating that they reduce it. This is George R.R. Martin, Ryan Condal are thinking about it, and they think this is the best way forward. And if that's the case, obviously I'm cool with it. If it really is based on that, the trick there is how much of that is the God's honest truth, and how much is, you know, the HBO spokesperson spinning this in a positive light.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, you know, I'm inclined to believe that House of the Dragon probably has the support to do whatever it wants in this instance.
So did Game of Thrones, though.
So did Game of Thrones. I think the big difference here is House of the Dragon is just getting started.
Yeah.
Whereas Game of Thrones had been on the air for, you know, it was less than a decade by the time season 7 started, but they'd been working on it for probably close to a decade at that point.
Oh yeah.
In terms of the production itself.
It was an old man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not many shows get the 6 seasons, you know, even.
No, it's true. Especially less and less now, it seems like, in kind of this prestige mm-hmm. era of huge big budget shows. So I think I'm not worried about this. I feel like it probably is for the right reasons. I am really curious about what battle they're pushing back. I have a feeling
I was curious
probably
too. Try and say it
thoughts,
like without spoiling too much.
Okay, I will. I think obviously there are going to be battles everywhere. It's the Dance of the Dragons.
Sure.
To my eye, it either means they're pushing back what I figured would be the climax, which has to do with a certain, as you put it in the announcement for this, a kerfuffle in King's Landing.
Thank you. Love that word. Good word, kerfuffle.
So I think either that's going to get pushed back, or they're going to take one of the things that happens before it and make it happen after, which I could see.
I could see that.
Finagling if it's like a minor battle or something like that. But I just chuckled a second ago because I didn't even really think about this when I read this the first time, but I had a trauma flashback from you just talking about this, because that's what a George R.R. Martin move this is, to be like, we're pushing one battle back from the end of this into the next season. Because that is like,
right.
That's what he said about A Dance with Dragons. It was supposed to have the battles at the end that got pushed back into the Winds of Winter at Marine, a battle in
that's
the fire and a battle
good point,
in the ice.
Yeah.
Presumably Marine and Winterfell, or Stannis at Winterfell. So it kind of cracks me up that House of the Dragon is taking a page from George's book here, and they're pushing some sort of battle back to season 3.
It's possible that George took a page from George's book, and like actually he suggested
that's
this.
That's true. You know what you could do? You could push that battle back to next season. Yeah,
you know what?
I mean, who knows?
We can't get under the deadline.
That's
we're gonna
funny.
Have to push it back. That's interesting. I love different impressions
funny.
Into books. That's cool. I figure that they have to have Rook's Rest. I won't say what happens with this stuff, because that's like not too far in. They got to have blood and cheese. Obviously, they're probably gonna have the twin. The Cargill Bowl. They're probably going to have the Battle of the Gullet. Those are all
they gotta
coming
have
up
the
pretty
gullet.
Quick.
Yeah,
that'd make a good ending. It would make kind of a similar ending to season
it
one,
would.
Frankly. But you parallelism that they can make it work. They can make it work for them. So basically, if the way Deadline is presenting it is the truth, then I'm cool with this. And you know that this also
Same.
Kind of sheds light on the announcement that you know, the crown guy, David Hancock, is joining to write 2 episodes. So, okay, if they're restructuring a bit, makes sense they bring in somebody new. I will say, here's one final bit of trepidation that not long ago. Oh, by the way, Zach has a great comment on YouTube. They probably have a story they want to tell and a spot they want to stop at and realize they don't need 10 episodes. Better than getting 2 slow filler episodes, which, yeah, I agree with.
Yeah,
you know, I will say same. One thing Game of Thrones never had and House of Dragons never had was filler. I don't think like there really was never an ounce of fat on this thing. It's just not that kind of show or not that kind of story.
Yeah, there's too much. You know, there's so much that it's like, what would a filler episode even look like? They're juggling,
I don't know.
You know, 10 plot lines all at once in the first place.
Camilla's salty about it, by the way. I understand my perspectives. I think it's too early to tell. I mean, again, if the Deadline narrative is right, I think it sounds good. However, I want to note that there were rumors a while back which were much less charitable. And there were rumors going around.
That's true.
This kind of online about.
I
mean, that's when I heard about this.
I didn't think about that.
That they're that things are being rewritten. They have to bring in, they're bringing in George R.R. Martin to help. And this does sound like the positive version of that. Like, this sounds like the official line. Now, the difference in that is that Deadline has sort of it's about the story. It's about long-term planning. It's about saving time between seasons. It's all for the best attitude. And the rumors were like, it's a mess. They have to rewrite everything. Nothing's working. They're going to charge R.R. Martin. So they're kind of the same thing. The difference was like the pessimism
the spin.
Versus optimism spin on it. What's the truth? probably somewhere in the middle, but
I would imagine
we're not really sure. And thank you, Andrew, for loving the live streams.
Yeah, glad you're here, Andrew. Yeah, I would imagine it's somewhere in the middle. And, you know, it's kind of indicative of what you'd expect, right? Anytime something is internet gossip, it's probably going to have a slightly more negative spin. And when a big publication is reporting on it, yeah, they might be a little more hesitant to really be like, this is a shot. Yeah, it's a sign the show is falling apart. I will say, I could see this working really well, especially, again, keeping things low spoiler. Mm-hmm. You mentioned parallelism before.
Parallelism.
If something like if King's Landing, whatever happens there, is what gets pushed back to season three, there will be multiple King's Landing things happening that season. I could see that being a really good parallel of like starting and ending the season with some King's Landing stuff.
Yeah, that
we're
going to
see
too.
Quite a lot of stuff there.
There's lots of ways to go.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. So aside from just the fact that I could easily like imagine how it could work out well to restructure mm-hmm. in this way, I also think this is different than Thrones because 8 episodes is a normal thing now. So it's not just like they're gutting the show. It's like a lot of shows get 8 episodes now.
And I mean, and that's longer than Thrones got. I would have liked it if season 7 or 8 got 8 episodes. Yeah. Could have helped a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, reasons for some mild trepidation, but this is one of those things where we're going to kind of have to see what it looks like when it comes out. But I'm not too worried just based on.
I'm not too worried either. It is interesting. And it is interesting how this is basically the positive version of that rumor that we heard and weren't given a lot
and
of credence to before.
Some of it.
I mean,
yeah,
I guess.
And confirmed some of it.
It's
George
all
being
about,
involved.
Right. It's just remarkable how like the same set of facts can inspire completely different reactions depending on like how you phrase it and how you present it. Like the good version, the bad version. By the way, some great comments.
That's funny. Relevant Nathan, to the other thing we're going to talk about today.
That is true. Nathan says that
about
the filler episode, that they left out a whole child in the first season, Darren Targaryen. I assume we're talking about Nathan. And that didn't have room for filler. They're going to bring him into season 2 was the last word on that. But I mean, Frank, maybe now who knows what they're being restructured. I hope they do bring him in. Andrew asks, what do we like more, Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon? I think it's too early to tell. I thought the first seasons were very competitive with each other. Game of Thrones is more flawless, probably. But I like Game of Thrones more. Yeah, probably. House of the Dragon was close.
There's a lot less incest in it, and I personally support that.
Wait, you don't think the incest is a selling point? Weird. Okay, whatever. But sure.
I think if I had to choose which I'd rather watch, I would much rather watch ice zombies than incest. But
I'm honestly not sure. If the incest is great, give me some more incest. But I like Game of Thrones more, but I am not anti-incest on TV. In real life, yeah, I love disclaiming this. I was on board for the incest in House of the Dragon. Damon Shippers didn't.
All right, you heard it here first.
I was. Camilla says, as long as Amy gets plenty of screen time. And Alice, yes. And Jay Patel says, they said they're unsure whether to end the series 3 or 4 seasons. Which is more likely now. Yeah, Jay, the article said that they weren't quite sure whether it was 3 or 4, but they were leaning towards 4, which, of course, I would prefer. More is better for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Lizzie is excited to get to Westeros, Eerie Winterfell to meet Cregan Stark. There's a lot of good stuff in the future, and I'm curious. Hopefully 2024 where it'll be out. And yeah, as by the way, great comments, people. Thank you for keeping these coming. As Martha says, it could be another good thing if it means we have less of a wait time between seasons, which planning it out all out ahead of time and renewing things earlier would be great. And just in general, HBO is really riding high, man. House of the Dragon and The Last of Us. They now have the two biggest genre shows on TV, and they can run them one year after another. They're in a good spot right now.
Yep.
I just hope this is all for the best.
I think one other thing to keep in mind, this is my last point to put across for this change. with Shadow and Bone, one thing that I heard the showrunner say is Netflix gave them the option. You can have 10 episodes or you can have 8 episodes with a higher production value. Hmm. And I imagine House of the Dragon is early enough in production where that is going to apply here too. It's not like their budget is getting slashed to have 8 episodes. I imagine they're still going to get the same budget over less episodes, so they'll be able to make them bigger and better. That's the maybe. Hope. We'll see what actually happens.
I mean, I could see it. I could also see just because with respect, Shadow and Bone is not House of the Dragon. Like, House of the Dragon is like award-winning, Emmy-nominated kind of prestige fantasy trash, where Shadow and Bone is more normal fantasy trash. I'm not sure they'd have access to as big of a budget, but maybe.
Well, no, that's not really my point is not that their budgets are comparable. It's that House of the Dragon probably will still have the budget it had, but it will be allocating less episodes, so it can put more budget in each episode. That would be something I'd hope to see from this, but we'll see.
And then there's the Jon Snow show Martha brought up. Tulki did not enjoy Shadow and Bone as it went on, which I think we are both in agreement with Tulki. Dan did not like it either.
Yeah.
Oh, pardon me. And I like Nathan's asking whether they needed to bring in George to fix the Darren gap. I love that, the Darren gap or the Sea Smoke ownership issues. They should have asked him at the start about Sea Smoke and stuff. We're getting off topic, though.
We're in the weeds here.
Should we move on to our next juicy, gossipy, drama channel type topic?
Yeah, unless you had a little map you wanted to show. Do you want to skip or do we want to touch on that?
Yeah, let's
quick.
Do it.
Because I thought that was pretty cool. What's the deal with this?
It is pretty cool. So, okay. A Game of Thrones fan named Clint Stevenson went to the Cushing Library at Texas A&M University, which is where George R. R. Martin like sends all his personal papers. Authors have this sometime, like a repository for their papers. Mm-hmm. And he found a map of Westeros drawn in 1993, 3 years before a Game of Thrones came out, the first ever Game of Thrones book. And just this is like a really early conception. It's really kind of cool. The shape looks the same, but Harrenhal is where the Eyrie is. And
interesting.
Yeah, and Harren, like, there's no castle by the God's Eye, which is where Harrenhal is now, like in canonically. So he changed the location of Harrenhal. I think like Sunspear is called like Iron Rod or something, a different name. The Arbor is called the Roin. So he just kind of changed things around. Okay. Interesting stuff.
Oh, that's interesting. The Arbor is called the Roin. So there's I always love looking at Martin's like older works or broader works, because the Roin, obviously, that is the river in Essos that I believe Nymeria came from.
Yes, it is.
So it's always cool to see how like the Eyrie is that's a thing in other books of his, like Windhaven. There is a place called the Eyrie. So it's like he likes to shuffle things around once he decides he likes them. That's really cool.
He likes birds.
I love seeing stuff
really
like
cool.
That.
And by the way, someone asked about The Mandalorian. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, Daniel, what is going on in the drama corner of the internet? And who does it involve and why should we care?
Okay, well, one of the biggest dramas of the past week since last we spake was revolving around Brandon Sanderson. Huge best-selling fantasy author. He finished The Wheel of Time. His own works like The Stormlight Archive and Mistborn are big enough that he's basically like one of, if not the best-selling living fantasy author right now.
Gotta be
Wired.
Best,
I think he probably is the best-selling living currently, partially because he just writes so many books.
Yeah.
So he's selling a lot of books. But
according to
Wired,
the article, he made $55 million last year.
Which is a total misnomer. It's just an incorrect statement.
It is?
Yes, they were taking... It is not right. They were taking the kick... So we're going to get into this. So Wired published a profile on Sanderson. They sent a journalist out.
How many ways was he wrong?
His name is Jason Kehe. a lot of ways. And basically, the profile just evolved into mudslinging. It was basically about how this journalist couldn't wrap his head around how Brandon Sanderson is popular. He doesn't understand why people like him because he personally did not like Sanderson's writing. And that is the whole premise of the article. The article like, really does not
find
tell
him
you very
an engaging
much
conversationalist.
Sanderson.
It doesn't. So weird. This guy, Jason Keighy, who, you know, don't go slag him off or anything, but just, you know,
Sanderson has asked you not to.
Using his name, because I mean, like, his name's on it. This guy profiles this hugely successful, very influential fans, the other Brandon Sanderson, and the entire article just reads so bizarrely. It's like condescending the whole way through. This quote had me, got me. Like, he sits across from me in an empty restaurant, kind of lordly and sure of his insights, in a graphic t-shirt, an ill-fitting blazer, which he says he wears because it makes him look professorial. It doesn't. He isn't. Like, the little slights throughout are just so petty and just seem so out of place. His wife is there, his biggest fan, always his first reader, making polite comments. I don't care. Maybe nobody writes about you, I say to Sanderson, because you don't write very well. He's like, this guy is like trying to, I don't know what he's trying to do, like convey the idea that he's some kind of rebel, like gonzo writer who's not afraid to take it there and do things that people won't, but he just comes across as a guy who has never been around a nerd before and wants to push him into a locker. Yes. It's so weird.
Yeah. And a lot of the comments are just, again, like the examples you just used, they're really not very helpful. They don't really tell you anything. They're just like cruel asides. So there's a whole like can of worms with the ethics of this thing that it just, I will just say for me personally, it made me really look at Wired in a different light as well. You're basically a tabloid because you had this opportunity to interview this huge author and all you could find were just ways to basically insult him for being a nerd, insulted his fans
and a Mormon, don't forget,
insulted
that.
One of his children. Yeah, and here's the irony with this. This is the thing that gets me with this. Okay. So there is an actual controversy around the fact that Sanderson tithes money to the Mormon Church. And the Mormon Church is famously anti-LGBTQ. And Sanderson
wrong,
has talked about that. It was supposed to be a B, but here I am. So that is a whole thing. And Sanderson has responded to it. It is a fascinating topic to hear his opinion for how he justifies it. And
what a great thing to write about. How interesting would it be if we heard something about that?
Yeah. And so totally sidestepped this actual thing that is very newsworthy and worth discussion to basically make jibes about the fact that he's religious and how that seems weird to this writer who came off of the throne of San Francisco and flew out to frozen, lame Utah, which that sounds like I'm being
facetious. I didn't
like
their Japanese sushi food. No, that's exactly what he wrote. This like, I can't believe I dragged myself away from my good food and my warm place to go to Salt Lake City, where it's cold and the sushi isn't up to par with what I get back in San Fran. Oh my God, it sounded like such a, your baby thing.
Yeah, so this is the thing where it's like, not only is this just bafflingly short-sighted, but it also is just bad journalism because I feel bad for the people who read it, who read Wired, who don't know enough about Sanderson to know that it's not an informative article, who now know less about Sanderson than they did when they read it, because there's so much misinformation in it. And so the money thing, mm-hmm. apparently just misspeaking is the name of what I'm doing today. The income for 2022 saying he made $55 million. So that is including Sanderson's Kickstarter profits. One that is his company, Dragonsteel, had a record-breaking Kickstarter. But a Kickstarter is not profits. They were saying this is his income, and it's not his income. It is a business endeavor he did, most of which is going to go toward the overhead of fulfilling the Kickstarter. It's not profits he's taking home. It's not what he made in the year.
So not only did this Jason Keighley guy like was just snide and condescending throughout the entire thing, he didn't even get the facts right, really, or at least presented them in a way that was very misleading. It's like nothing.
That's
what this.
That is. Yeah, that's my opinion.
Like the Mormon bit. Like I like there are legitimate reasons to have critiques of the Mormon Church. And I believe that. They are, as you said, notable for being having some policies that are anti-LGBTQIA+. That's how you say it. Warp on the boots. But thank the you. Way that this guy did it, he just like there's a line there. He literally like says to Brandon Sanderson, like, so you believe all this stupid stuff, right? And like, that's the critique. That's just rude. That's disrespectful. That's not a critique. That's not like a structural criticism of an organization that could actually yield some interesting discussion. That's just you being a bully about the guy's religion to his face. And that's what he chose to go with. And the bits where he complained, like there are long stretches where he's like, Sanderson is giving me nothing quotable, nothing I can use. And we're naming all these things you could ask him about the Kickstarter, the actual issues with Mormonism. Yeah. You know, the way he builds his worlds. Just sure, like, look at the fact that he has some family working for him and talk to them about what they do and why they like it and why they're part of this job. There are so many avenues to go down. I don't believe whatever Sanderson was saying in these stretches that he said weren't quotable. I think he's wrong. I probably in there was good
stuff.
Agree. He just did not cotton on to because apparently his interests are like these weird myopic tunnel. Of whatever he was looking for, he didn't find. And you're probably like being just pelted with gold and just ignored it. Cause I don't know what's the matter. The bits where he said he like cried in the shower because nothing, or that Brandon Sanderson showed for his home theater and then he cried
Hugh
watching
Jackman.
The British Showman because he hates the movie so much. So weird. So weird. The bits where he went to the convention and basically like called his fans like that they all smell bad, that they're smelly nerds. Just, It read, and I think Sanderson responded on Reddit saying like it read like a 1980s takedown of nerds, which it did. It read like this guy has never
totally
been
did.
Around a nerd. He's never been around a nerd. Like, okay, yeah, he's going to talk at length about like dragons and crap you find boring. And he wants to show off his cool like home theater system. And he signs a lot of autographs for folk who are in costumes. Like, dude, this is not abnormal stuff for nerds. This is pretty standard stuff.
No.
And you're treating it like you've just stumbled into some kind of aboriginal civilization cut off from the rest of the world, just newly discovered people who like don't know what a bathtub is. It was, oh my God, it was bad. Yeah. It's bad.
Yeah. So this happens.
Don't harass him.
Don't harass him. Sanderson has asked people to leave him alone, and you have to respect that. He responded. His response was very kind. You can find it on Reddit. You can find it on winterscoming.net. Dan wrote up a great article about it. But yeah, generally, I very much agree with all the things you're saying. The one last takeaway that I really had is the end point of this story. The thing that made the story for this person is Sanderson saying, as I build books, God builds people. And this person was like, what did you say? And
as if it's some kind
it's just
of
such
weird,
a,
bizarre key to his secret cult. I don't know.
But here's the funny thing about this, right? So I'm saying this. I'm not Christian, Mormon, any of those things. But having any sort of spiritual language or understanding, that doesn't seem very profound. And basically Sanderson responded on Reddit and said, the ironic thing is I don't even remember. He said, I don't even remember saying that because that's not a huge profound thing to me. That's just, you know, I make books, God makes universes and people. Cool. So yeah, it seemed much more like a personal journey of discovery for a writer who couldn't wrap their head around how someone was more famous than they are when they're so much cooler.
And that's so much cooler. Yeah, good call.
It's a shame because, you know, fame and perception, you know, someone can seem famous to you, but if you don't take a step back to understand how your perception affects what you think is famous, mm-hmm. You can fall into the trap this guy did, which is, who's this nerd no one's heard of? Meanwhile, he's like the best-selling fantasy author in the world. So
there was definitely a lack of
perspective
and self-awareness. Yeah, I could see that. But the fact that Sanderson is being profiled, because we've said before, we're like a breath away from his books being adapted to the screen somewhere.
Oh, sure.
Like, he's too successful for Hollywood not to notice at this point. You like can't get around it.
The Kickstarter did it for him.
Yeah. So we'll have that stuff going on pretty soon. And you said that another publication got an interview with him, probably jumping on this one. Did he say anything about that in there or anything interesting in general?
Yes. Yeah. So it's ironic. All the things we're saying, they could have done this. Esquire published an interview with Sanderson today that basically did all the things we're saying you could have done. Theirs is great. Amen. I highly recommend checking it out. It really gets into the nuts and bolts of his business and all this different stuff, what he's trying to do with his publishing. And they did touch on this. So Esquire went down, it seemed like, right around the same time that the dude from Wired did. And they actually had their interview scheduled to go up the same weekend as the Wired one. And they pushed it back because obviously the Wired one just ate all the air out of the room because it was viral for how awful it was. And what they did is they pushed it back and they reached out to Sanderson and Jason Kihi and said, hey, do you want to talk about this Wired piece that happened?
Sure.
So here's what Sanderson said over the phone a few days later. He said, I felt betrayed. That was the strongest feeling I had after spending so much time talking to Jason about things he seemed so interested in. Ironic, said he's not interesting. He seemed interested. But I respect him as a colleague. He's a writer, so he has to write what's true for him, just like you do, to the writer from Esquire, and just like I do. And then Sanderson tells me he hasn't heard from Kihi or anyone else at Wired since the profile ran. But I hope I can talk to him again at some point, Sanderson says. Anytime I get criticism from anyone, my job is to listen. And he compared
it to... He's really coming off well here.
He really is. He compared the experience to something from the Cosmere, which is his fantasy universe. One of the main themes in my Mistborn books is that it's worth trusting people, even though they can hurt you. It's better to trust and be betrayed in real life, too. So that is the tack he's taking, which is just class act. They did reach out to Kihi as... Yeah, they reached out to the journalist from Wired as well, and the only response... They asked him a bunch of things about was he surprised of the responses to the story? Why did he read so many of Sanderson's books if he didn't like them? The journalist just wrote back, as I've said to others, the piece belongs to readers now. They get the last word.
Okay. So the last word is your piece sucks. That's
all
my
of
word.
You out there, you. There's one other one. I'm going to see if I can find it real quick.
All right, while you do that, I will say to Andrew, thanks for the comments on the Phantom Madness poll. Yeah, we'll put the new polls up today. Only two. There are only two left. It's going to be Dream versus Aziraphale and Crowley, the game and people are really into it, and then Joel versus Spider-Man. And I'm going to tell you right now, Andrew, if you want Joel to win, you're going to have to work hard because those Gaiman stands have come out in force. Neil Gaiman actually wrote very, very briefly on his Tumblr like three words about the polls, which I am very excited about. Thank you, Neil Gaiman. But I hope that the polls are fierce. I hope that The Last of Us gets wind of this. So yeah, you boost us too, and then Neil Gaiman boosts on the other side, and then we'll have a proper battle royale.
Yeah.
Find your quote, Daniel.
I did. So this last one revolves a little bit around like the criticism that Sanderson got with his Kickstarter, a lot of people saying support more diverse authors, support authors at the beginning of their careers, like all sorts of different reasons for, you know, when someone's really successful, people like to take shots at them.
Yes.
And so basically, so this is before the Wired profile, this next quote. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a good one to leave the Sanderson topic on. They asked, were you surprised by the criticism when your Kickstarter did well? And he said, I wasn't surprised. When you're at the top of your field, you're a lightning rod for criticism. And that's actually healthy. The industry needs that. We don't need people criticizing the person just starting out. This is where the criticism should go, he said, pointing at himself. And again, it's kind of like the right. It speaks for itself. You know, the article painted him in a real bad light. And everything he's said since then is just like, he's just a nice person trying to write books people like.
Damn, folks could like study his responses for like examples of how to do PR well after a kerfuffle.
They really could.
Because he's, this is very good management. And I'm sure it's sincere, but it's just, it's...
Same.
It's a very good template. But okay, enough about Brandon Sanderson, up and coming. Ooh. I mean, he is, because he's... His career isn't done rising. Like, once he gets into Hollywood, you think it's successful now, he could become that much bigger. And he could have, like...
He's a 20-year, an overnight, 15-year overnight success.
Any case, Daniel and everyone out there, you guys watching anything? Did you watch The Mandalorian, Daniel? The new one?
I have not had a chance to watch the new Mandalorian quite
yet.
Because I've been embroiled in the Sanderson stuff a little bit today. So I haven't seen it. If you guys out there have seen it, what did you think of the latest episode?
Yeah, no.
I liked watched either the last
yet. I
one
will,
before
but
this.
Not yet.
Cool. Yeah, same. I will probably watch it later tonight. I've been enjoying this season. I'm still feeling a little bit of the, you know, the franchise fatigue just by how, you know, much they rely on linking it to other stuff.
It's a
but
shame.
I'm liking this season
is,
more than I expected.
It is well done. But yeah, it's just hard to escape that just there's some hype let out of the tires where there's just so much Star Wars stuff. Something that has a lot of hype around it, I thought lived up to it, was John Wick Chapter 4. I saw it over the weekend.
Tell
Keanu
me,
Reeves,
how was
like,
it?
Killing. It was great. I mean, these movies do not miss. They are just excuses to stage these incredibly elaborate, very fun action sequences in like real locations with a lot of stunt work, and they're just so much fun to watch. You can just tell people are just these are action filmmakers passionate about dazzling you in ways that don't feel cheap or overly CGI'd, and just at the same time, it's also the movies have succeeded in making their own little weird pocket universe with its own rules about this like assassin economy that John Wick exists in, and they've gotten like fairly complex and stylized to the point where like I wonder what the fanfic folk are doing with John Wick. So those two threads are both really fun, and then Keanu Reeves is a very appealing leading guy who just kind of drags you along emotionally and has a real arc, even though he says like I think 8 words total. It's great. I love it. I loved watching it. I hope the series continues. I'll watch the spinoff probably. I have become a fan of John Wick in the past like 6 months. I watched the movies. We're like, how have I not watched these before? And then saw this, and then this first one I saw in the theater. It was great. I recommend it. Rock on, John Wick.
Awesome. I'm really surprised that the mythology has grown to the point that it has. Well, I guess surprised is the wrong word, but watching the first one, if you had asked me when I watched the first one or two, that wouldn't have been the thing I predicted. Like, this will go on to the point where like we actually have conversations about the Continental and the ballerinas and stuff.
And the high table and all this, like if you want a franchise, pretty much all for like fantasy, and this is a fantasy franchise more or less, start having a mythology for the fans to like cling on to. You want the lore, like you want some stuff for people to have a way to think that they're fans of this, like a secret handshake almost. Like, do you know the rules behind how this duel's supposed to work, then you're a fan. It's that kind of thing. It's fun.
Yeah. And they kind of like ease you into it in a way that I think worked really well. Because like you said, John Wick is, you know, if you want to study doing action scenes well in a way that will not make your audience's eyes glaze over and still be telling cool stories, John Wick is just at the top of that game right now.
Ooh, so good. So
I wonder if they're going to make another one. That has been a big conversation topic in the past week.
Yeah, we'll see. Not sure. I won't spoil the end, but it's they could not. It opened really strong, so if it makes enough money, I don't know, it might be happening no matter what or not. Yeah. We'll see. Watch anything else, Daniel?
I haven't really been watching over much this week. I've been reading Six of Crows still by Leigh Bardugo.
Ooh, and,
yeah,
literary, man.
And that's been really good. I'm definitely to the point. I saw one journalist tweet about this and it cracked me up and I thought it was on point that the Shadow and Bone book fans didn't like season two, but still want the show to succeed because they really want the Six of Crows spinoff. And I will say now that I'm into Six of Crows, I totally agree with that because I want that show. I think if we've made it through two seasons of Shadow and Bone, we deserve the Six of Crows spinoff. So I hope it happens. The other main thing I've been doing, and I'll just touch on this briefly because it's a George R. R. Martin related thing. So I've been playing Elden Ring a lot. I finally beat Elden Ring after many, many hours. Thank you. I was very proud. But the thing that cracked me up, so I don't know if you remember this, but like when it came out, there were a lot of hot takes. Like, what did George R. R. Martin even contribute to this? Like, he doesn't play games. Like, what did he really do?
Sure. I still wonder that.
I've just got to... Well, I will say, now that I'm getting into the lore of Elden Ring, it is the most George R. R. Martin stuff I've ever heard in my life. Like, it is so obviously his style. The demigods are families that are clashing over the land and stabbing each other in the back. It is so on brand for him. And they confirmed he did, like, the history of the world. Sure. So that is what he did, was the backstory for them.
It's also not that dissimilar from like the lore in Dark Souls or Bloodborne, though. Like that also has of the same themes going on. So they made a good match, Miyazaki and George R. R. Martin, because they thought alike anyway. It's kind of hard to
disentangle. That's exactly what I was gonna say. They totally seem like a perfect pair to build a world like this together. That's the main thing I've been up to in the past week. But the Dungeons and Dragons movie comes out next weekend. Are you going to go see it?
I don't think I have time this weekend. I hear it's good, though. Our reviewer,
I've been hearing a lot of good things.
Richard Urquiza did not like it. But to be fair, Richard, if you're watching,
that sounds
you don't like much. What do you
You're
love?
Harsh, Richard.
But yes, he didn't think it was terrible, but he thought it was, I don't know, roll to 10, if you will.
Okay. I'll take that as a glowing review. I won't
see it this weekend. I won't have time, but I'm curious about it. Are you gonna see it?
I'm not gonna see it this weekend, but I will definitely be watching it. That and John Wick I'll probably get to next week at some point. Our next show. I'll have seen at least one of them.
I also watched Succession, the season 4 premiere. Show's as good as ever.
How is it?
It's the final season. It's great. It's great. It was great. They always have every episode. They have a thing where they kind of skip forward to the next inflection point and they just tell the story about that. They don't really do like a Game of Thrones, like stories move on bit by bit. It's like the next big event. And Roy kids versus the Roy dad, loved it, into it, want more of it. I'll watch it. And And Perry Mason too continues to be good as well. And what do we think of the new Lord of the Rings movies coming? Asked Andrew. TBD, but have a bad feeling about this. But we'll see what happens. Anything else? Anybody out there, or you are watching before we move on, Daniel?
Nope. I am ready to lightning round. I will just say, we'll see what happens with the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm giving it a side eye until I've got a real good reason not to.
By the way, Stephen Howie says, movie. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, not expecting an art film, That makes sense. Why would you? But you're expecting to laugh and enjoy some references to the game I love. I feel like that's exactly the attitude to go into that with. Leo asks, did anyone see Swarm? I have not, but I've heard nothing but good things about Swarm. So I didn't know anything about it until like a week and a half ago, but I've just seen so many people talking it up that I might need to watch it.
Some fun stuff breaking out. Let's see if we hit any fun little smaller breakout stories in the WIC News lightning round, where Daniel and I and the guests sometimes, I thought, thank you, go through some stories we didn't have time to get through in the main body of the show and give our 20-second takes. We go over 1 second. We are punished horribly off camera. How? None of your business. Anyway, Daniel, let us begin. Yes. As usual, didn't arrange and blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm going to ask you first.
Okay.
Daniel Roman, 20 seconds on the clock.
Yes.
Please give us your opinion on this first look at Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn in Joker Folie à Deux, the Joker sequel to the Joaquin Phoenix movie.
It gets me excited. I like Lady Gaga a lot. I'd love to see her do a really unhinged role like that. So
shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, just gets me hyped. I want to see how this turns out. I'm more curious for this than any other DC movie coming in the remote near future.
Yeah. Perfect. Go on.
Under the buzzer. All right. So this is a less happy story, but an important one. So Jonathan Majors, who is Kang in the MCU, was arrested and arraigned on charges of assault and harassment over the past weekend.
Yeah. The story is still coming together, but basically the story is Jonathan Majors assaulted a woman, possibly his girlfriend, in New York. He was arrested, arraigned. We'll see what happens. His lawyer says he's innocent, but of course her lawyer says he's innocent. The charges are still there. Good Lord, couldn't come at a worse time, because he's huge right now. He's in Creed. Yep. He's in Marvel. So we'll have to see how that works out, because that could cause some big problems for Disney going forward.
That's exactly and for a lot,
for, and for
too,
a lot
yeah.
of folk. And of course, we hope justice is served as well, whatever situation is.
Yeah.
Whatever they suss out in the legal process. All right, Daniel, a bit more mild of a story.
Yes.
The seventh season of Outlander is coming. It's going to release in 2 8-episode chunks. The first premieres on June 16th, and the second sometime next year.
Yeah. So this is actually something Outlander has done before during its first season, I believe, and it worked great. So I think that's fine that they're going to release it in chunks. I'm excited for... I think this new season of Outlander is probably going to be really good. They've had a lot of time to iron out any kinks. It's an ambitious part of the story, the Revolutionary War. Thumbs up here.
Finally.
So, Dan, this is cool. We were just talking about this earlier. So, Black Panther director Ryan Coogler is rebooting The X-Files with a diverse cast.
Yeah, so says Chris Carter, the guy who made the original X-Files show. Yeah, sure. Why not? The X-Files is an important show. Laid the groundwork for a lot of shows we watch today, genre series. It'd be cool. I'd be into it. It's lasted a long time. Like, they had Mulder and Scully, like David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson, in a show like a couple of years ago. So for like a proper reboot, yeah, sure. Bring it on. I'd be interested. Why not?
Yeah, I'd give it a chance for sure.
In the Last Kingdom corner of the internet, there is a new Last Kingdom book coming, but it is a Last Kingdom cookbook that also has stories written by Bernard Cornwell. It's called Uhtred's Feast. What's the deal with this one, Daniel?
Yeah, I think this is super cool and a little funny. So it is a cookbook with 80 recipes. Bernard Cornwell met this chef. So they're like Anglo-Saxon medieval recipes with okay. some short fiction for Uhtred that Bernard Cornwell could never quite figure out a place to tell. So like one story when he was a boy, one when he was still an advisor to Alfred, stuff like that. Hmm. I love this. It's fun to see something different. And I've never seen a cookbook story hybrid like that.
Yeah, neither, I don't think anybody has.
Yeah. And yes, I ran long on the buzzer because destiny is all. speaking of innovating, I don't know if this is innovating. I don't know.
It's not.
I'm going to try to tell this with a straight face because I don't want to be a jerk. So this House of the Dragon watch, you're going to see a picture of in a sec. It's from Cross Studio. It's gorgeous. It costs a measly $117,443. And when are you getting yours, Dan?
I'm not. It comes with the egg, to be fair. So it's the watch and the egg for that. And there are multiple colors you can choose from. Cross Studio is like this really high-end watchmaker. And they've made other kind of like tie-in watches, I think, for like the Book of Boba Fett. They made one. And they're really, really expensive. They're Swiss. Those are prices in like Swiss francs. And I translated that to dollars. Seems expensive for a watch. Seems very expensive for a watch. I don't care if you made it out of like actual Valyrian steel. It seems expensive. It's really expensive.
Which it is. Daniel, it's not Damascus steel.
Valyrian steel isn't real, so it's not made of Valyrian steel, but it's made of like fancy steel. Yes, but it's not the same thing as it being made of Valyrian steel. Anyway,
that's fair.
Pricey ass dragon watch.
It's not forged in the fires of Valyria. Fine, if but only. It looks cool.
Maybe I'm not sure it'd be worth that then, but it'd be a easier case. Daniel, Liv Tyler and Carl Lumbee will return to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Captain America: New World Order, Captain America 4.
Yeah, I'm starting to get really hyped for this movie. So Liv Tyler was Betty Ross, Thunderbolt Ross's daughter in The Incredible Hulk. This is her first time back in the MCU since then. So it's really cool to see them tying back to that movie. And Carl Lumbee, of course, was Isaiah Bradley in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So they are building out the cast for this thing. He was a total highlight. So I'm excited that they're both in this movie. All right.
That first buzzer, and then after that, we just failed every time. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So this is a slight downer we're going to end with, but again, important news. So PETA condemned the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, after a horse died of cardiac arrest on the set.
Yes, a horse had a heart attack instead of the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, season 2, and PETA, which is the animal rights organization, slammed them for it in a pretty like shady statement. I guess there's not much to say. I don't know if the horse death was something that couldn't be avoided or if someone was responsible. They could have been more careful. I don't know. Should they only ever use CGI animals forever and ever? Maybe. I'm not sure about that either. I've been very unhelpful. That's what happened, though. And now it's my opinion. And now the show's over. Guys, thank you for watching. It's a lot of fun. Some great comments today. Thank you all for weighing in. As Leo says, if you saw Lady Gaga in American Horror Story, she will do a great Harley Quinn. What's funny? Oh,
I'm laughing at Stephen Howie's comment.
That is good. Maybe the horse read the script and dropped dead.
Maybe it. Yeah. Oh
God, it was Steven. A genius horse, and we lost it to cardiac arrest. Ooh. I could read.
Oh God.
But yeah, exciting things happen. And you know, if you enjoyed this, we're here every single Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. 3 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Mountain, 3 p.m. Noon West Coast. I assume I'm not sure what time it is in England, but some, you know, a period of time. Who knows? It's possible. And we're also available in podcast form on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. We're there. Give us a like, give us a follow, give us a subscribe, come back, hang out, ask more questions, rap with us. We're just going to rap. We're going to answer. We're going to have a good time. Thanks for watching. Thank you, Martha, for watching. And see you next week when I will still not have my $117,000 watch from Cross Studios. Who needs that when I have my $200,000 Valyrian steel anklet that you can't see because the camera doesn't go down that far? See you next week. Bye.
Take care, y'all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.